Life is not always easy. We can think that we have it all under control. We may deceive ourselves into believing that we can handle all the problems that life has to throw at us. But when something big comes along, we are forced to admit that there are many difficulties beyond our own ability to deal with, and many problems that we cannot solve ourselves. Sometimes, possibly due to no fault of our own, there are people who wish us ill and seek to have us fail. We may be in competition with them directly, or they may simply want us to fail because they hate what we believe in or what we stand for. They can employ various tactics, such as threats and rumors, to undermine us and make us detestable to those around us. At other times, it can feel like everyone hates us, or that no one cares or is able to help when we run into trouble. It can feel like we've lost all the leverage we have to get out of the holes that we have fallen into, or even the holes that we have dug for ourselves. At these times, it can feel like the entire world is against us. Another moment, or kind of moment, that reminds us that we are weaker than we think is when our bodies fail. This can extend to the illness or death of a close family member. There are plenty of terminal diseases and chronic conditions that even the best of today's medical technology and expertise cannot remedy. And what do we do when we experience these moments, when our own limits and weaknesses are made oh so very real to us? We become desperate and admit that we need help. It tends to be only the big things and desperate circumstances that lead us to seek help. But it shouldn't be. We are not alone in our limitations. Many of our fellow human beings experience them every day, and many throughout the history of humanity have experienced them as well. The psalmist, who wrote Psalm 31, has troubles of his own that closely relate to the troubles we see in our own lives. It is obvious from what is written in the psalm that he is dealing with something that is affecting his physical health. Beginning in verse 9, he lists a number of his symptoms. My eyes grow weak with sorrow, my soul and body with grief, my strength fails, my bones grow weak. The psalmist is falling apart. His eyes are so full of tears from crying that his sight is blurred. He's so stressed out by his situation that his muscles don't have the power to do what he asks of them. And the very structure of his being, both physical and spiritual, is crumbling. What is causing all this stress? He is being both persecuted and abandoned. His enemies are out to get him. They've laid out a net to capture him. They're hunting him like a wild animal, and there is nowhere he can go where he is safe from them. They tell lies about him and plot strategies to destroy him. Everyone seems to know that the psalmist has enemies that are out to get him, and because they know that it's dangerous to associate with him, no one wants to have anything to do with him. I am a dread to my friends. Those who see me on the street flee from me. No one offers help. No one offers protection. No one comes to his aid. I am forgotten as though I were dead, he says. The psalmist feels worse than useless to all who know him. He's like a clay pot that will hold nothing, a clay pot that has nothing to offer but the sharp edges of its shards that someone might get cut on. even though he's at his weakest. The slander and conspiring of his enemies does not stop. The psalmist is powerless and alone with terror on every side. The evil does not relent, and there seems to be no escape. But the psalmist hopes that there will be one who will save him, a God who is worthy of his trust. The psalmist also seeks to make clear that, in contrast to his enemies, that he is loyal to Yahweh. I hate those who cling to worthless idols. I trust in the Lord, he says. This could be more emphatically translated to say, I hate those who depend on things that don't exist. I trust in Yahweh, the God of Israel. Because the psalmist knows that he can trust Yahweh, the Lord, he feels that he can make demands of Yahweh because he knows Yahweh has a reputation to maintain. Something that is very notable about the first few verses of Psalm 31 is how closely the psalmist's petitions for help are tied into the statements of trust that he makes. The psalmist names Yahweh as his fortress, as his rock, and as his refuge. In the same breaths, he demands that Yahweh act as those three protecting forces toward him. This is a trust that hedges its bets. It knows that Yahweh is a God of his word. It knows that Yahweh has protected the psalmist in the past. It knows that Yahweh has not completely abandoned him or handed him over to his enemies. But maybe Yahweh could use a little reminder. I'm trusting in you, the psalmist says. You better not forget to deliver. Twice the psalmist is saying, twice the psalmist asks Yahweh to acknowledge him and pay attention to his needs, saying, turn your ear to me. Let your face shine on me. You're such a big God, and I'm such a small, needy, broken human being. I hope that you don't forget about me. In the midst of all this petitioning and begging for rescue, the psalmist admits his own powerlessness and recognizes his ultimate dependence on Yahweh when he states, into your hands I commit my spirit. Redeem me, O Lord, the God of truth. With this, he surrenders control of his life to the will of Yahweh to be used to bring about God's truth. The first half of this verse is most directly familiar to us from when it is quoted by Jesus in Luke 23, verse 46. Immediately before he died on the cross. It was also quoted by Stephen, the deacon, when he was being stoned. And a number of Christians throughout history, including Martin Luther and Saint Jerome, spoke these words before their deaths. As the psalmist used this phrase as an ultimate statement of trust, surrendering the fate of his life and spirit into the hands of a faithful God, so too did our Christian forebears. The good news of this psalm is that the faithful, powerful God that the psalmist entrusted his spirit to has seen and has acted on his behalf. I will be glad and rejoice in your love, for you saw my affliction and knew the anguish of my soul. And he showed his wonderful love to me when I was in the besieged city. Yahweh saw the psalmist's trouble. Yahweh knew the pain he suffered, and Yahweh showed love to him in the midst of his troubles. The love mentioned here in both verse 7 and verse 21 is a translation of the Hebrew word hesed, which implies the love, mercy, and grace of God as someone who cares for our lives and sustains them. It is the love that is asked for in verse 16 when the psalmist cries, "Save me in your unfailing love." It is the love of a ruler who wants the best for his people, and a love of a God who wants his people to be in right relationship with him. So what does Yahweh do for the psalmist who is being hunted like a wild animal in a besieged city with terror on every side? He protects the psalmist from his enemies and does not let them capture him. God leads and guides the psalmist out of the net that is set to trap him and places him in a spacious place, a place of freedom and peace and safety, where the psalmist can rest because he's under Yahweh's protection. All of the Psalms, including Psalm 31, have been used in communal worship for generations. Even before the birth of Christ, this psalm bore witness to the faithfulness of God and the freedom and safety that he offered his people. It showed to those who used it in worship that they could afford to come to God as the psalmist did, and that they could depend on him because Yahweh, the Lord, preserved the faithful and strengthened those who put their faith in him. Psalm 31 still shows us that we can trust in a faithful God. In times when we are lonely, fearful, bullied, slandered, or abandoned, God sees us, he hears us, and he will not leave us alone. In fact, he was willing to suffer and die so that we could be made right with him. He not only turned his ear towards us and has let his face shine on us, he has led us through our lives and out of the dangerous traps and through the dark valleys that we have experienced. He became flesh and lived as one of us, and trusting that flesh along with his spirit into the hands of his heavenly Father for the good of the people he loved and created. He showed us how to fully entrust our lives into the hands of his Father. Many of us think of the words, "Into your hands I commit my spirit," as something relating to death. And that's easy to assume because, as mentioned before, many Christians have used those words when they felt their death approaching. But we should not simply be willing to trust God when we are about to die. Jesus trusted God enough to allow himself to be born and to live as one of us. As imitators of Christ, we need to be willing to trust that God will guide us in the paths he would have us walk, and to surrender all of our living days into his hands. A faithful God has proven himself worthy of such trust. When we entrust our lives into the hands of God, our perspective shifts, and he will empower us to see his goodness, to see his face, in our illnesses, he will bring about a sense of peace. In our losses, he will bring about a sense of understanding. In our abandonment, he will bring about a sense of closeness. In our persecution, he will bring about a sense of protection. This does not mean that these scenarios will be easy or easy to endure. But it does mean that we will not be alone when we are in them. God is always with us. And in the person of Jesus Christ, he knows what it is like to be human. He was punished and persecuted, though he did nothing wrong. And shortly before he was put to death, his friends abandoned him, some of them denying that they even knew him. We have a God who can empathize with our struggles. The knowledge of this should free us up to trust in him to protect us, comfort us, and supply our needs in a way that allows us to sacrifice and surrender our lives into his hands. It should empower us to be defiant in the face of unjust persecution, to be patient when facing rejection, and to trust in his strength and love in our moments of weakness. It should also encourage us to be on the lookout for others who are unjustly persecuted, abandoned, or powerless in their need. We should seek to empathize with those people in these situations as Christ empathized and continues to empathize with us. God shows his love to us in blessing us so that out of his love and strength, we are able to bless others. Our empathy and imitation of Christ can take many forms. We can support Christian causes financially. We can volunteer our time and talents to better the lives of others. We can petition corporations and governments who are taking advantage of those with little power to defend themselves. We can work to ease the physical pain and illness of others and show them that the comfort God offers is for them as well. We must be willing to sacrifice and surrender our lives and our spirits into the hands of our loving God. If we trust in him, he will not lead us wrong. This is why the psalmist who wrote Psalm 31 could speak to God's faithfulness and love when he wrote the psalm. It is why the nation of Israel and Christians throughout the century could testify of God's faithfulness to each other each time they used the psalm in worship. It is also why we can continue that tradition today in using it to bear witness to each other and the communities around us by proclaiming that we trust in the Lord. Amen.